So I don't want to put the mileage in, which would mean I would be training for longer distances. And after this year, which we're going to chat about, I don't want to run very far.
DigiRunners Radio episode 635 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to DigiRunners Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we dive into today's episode, just want to let you know that today's episode is powered by Bits. How's that for incorporating the sponsor into the sponsor read there? If you haven't used Energy Bits before, that is their tagline, powered by Bits. And what Energy Bits are basically they're dried and compressed algae tablets that you take by the handful. I take about 15 or 20 of them just about every morning to help me get my day started with a dose of greens. Because as I've said before, as I will continue to say until one of these days I get my act together, I don't eat as many vegetables as I should. I know that vegetables are good for me. I know I need to be more intentional about doing it. And one of the ways that I'm starting to try to trend in that direction is by regularly taking my, like I said, my daily dose of Energy Bits. They're simple. They're easy to take with a handful of algae with a gulp of water. Don't really even taste them. Now, you can chew them up if you want to, but they taste green. And they leave your mouth green, too. So you may not want to chew them up, but if you just pop them in your mouth and swallow them down real quick, there's no nasty taste, no smelling like a fishbowl, anything like that. It's good, healthy, full of vitamins, minerals, all organic, all sustainable, all renewable, all of the things, and certainly good for you. That's maybe one of the most important parts. So if you want to jump on board the Energy Bits bandwagon with me, head over to energybits.com. And order yourself a bag, and at checkout, make sure you use the code DizRuns. It'll save you 20%. It'll also throw a few shekels into my account as well. So everybody wins, right? You get more greens, you save a little bit of green, and I get a little bit of green. So all the green. Anyway, energybits.com is the website. DizRuns at checkout. Save yourself 20%. And now, let's go ahead and dive in to today's episode of the show. Hey guys, one of the things that I definitely enjoy is the ability to reconnect with a guest that has been on the show in the past and, you know, catching up on what has happened since our most recent chat. And also, sometimes that gives us a chance to really dig a bit deeper into some topics that we didn't get to cover the first time. Or in today's case, either the first time or the second time that she's been on the show. That's right, today's guest is making her third appearance on the show. And if you missed our first couple of chats, you may want to go ahead and press pause now and go back into the archives and get caught up, because we're you know, we may touch on a little bit of the backstory, but you can get a lot more detail and context in those episodes, which were episode 425 was her first time on the show, and 531 was the second time. So about a little over a year ago, and then about, I don't know, 6 or 7 months ago, if I do the counting, something like that, from the time this gets released. But lots of things have changed, and new adventures have been run. So that's what we're going to get into. If you caught those original episodes, but maybe don't quite remember, the Cliff Notes version of her story, and she can correct me if I get my facts too out of line, but she was an elite runner, a very accomplished runner in her younger days, had a series of injuries that ultimately kind of shortened her her career and kind of put a stop to her for running, but then discovered that running barefoot actually helped her stay healthy and really renewed a joy for running, in her 50s and continuing along as she goes. And the last couple of years, she's been living as a nomad and, working, running remotely, doing different things all over Europe mostly, but other places as well. And that kind of brings us to where we are today. So without any further ado, it's a pleasure to be able to welcome back Miss Julia Kai Taylor, and welcome her back to the show. So thanks for joining us again, Julia. Really, really appreciate you taking the time and coming back and seeing what transpires over the next however long we are chatting for today.
Yeah. Hi, Denny. It's so good to be here. I love talking to you. It's brilliant. The only thing I would say is that my running wasn't shortened by injury. I've never stopped running.
Okay.
So I've been running since I was 6, and I'm 59, and I have had every injury. I went through my body with my niece recently because I took her away, and we went through, and I've had an injury in every part of my body, we discovered. But I've never actually stopped running. I've worked my way through all my injuries, and After my international career, I did a lot less through my 30s.
Gotcha.
But in my 40s, I was a very fast, very top age group runner, and I was the fastest runner in Sussex, where I lived in England, outright from 2 miles to the marathon. When I was 45, I was faster than all the young runners. So I've always run, and I've been fast in my 50s. But I have found that by returning to barefoot running, I'm even more free and even more agile and, yeah, free-flowing in my running than, well, back to when I was a teenager, really. Mm-hmm. So that's all.
Okay, okay.
That, yeah, so I have had injuries, and I could tell you a whole podcast of injuries, but we won't.
right. So good stuff. But definitely, did, you know, like I said, discovered that running barefoot has been a good thing for you. And guys, if you want to check out more of what Julia's got, or like I said, if you missed the back episodes, the first two go rounds that we had here, JuliaKaiTaylor.com is the website. Julia, JuliaKaiTaylor.com. On the Twitter, if you want to connect with Julia, if you haven't done so already, at JuliaKaiTaylor and then the number one. And on Instagram, new to Instagram, you can connect with her there at Julia_Kai. JULIA_CHI. And once again, DizRuns.com/425 for round one. DizRuns.com/531 for round two. And then today's show notes, if you want to check out some of the photos of the big journey that we're going to be talking about probably for the most part today, but who knows what tangents we might also go around off on. But DizRuns.com/635 will take you to the show notes for the third go round with Julia today. So Julia, you know, as we talked about before we officially started recording here, you know, you've been here before. We've you know, asked this opening question before. Asked it a couple times, and between the first time and the second time, the answer changed. So I'm gonna ask it again and see if maybe the answer's changed, if it's still the same, if it's something different. Who knows what happens over the course of however many months since we talked last. But you know it's coming. Everybody that's listening knows it's coming. What is, at this point, today in your life, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
At this point, I can't remember what I said last time. I remember what I said the first time. But at this point, 5K.
Okay.
Is absolutely my favorite distance, 5 kilometers, because I am looking forward to seeing how fast I can get. I turn 60 next year, and I've looked up all the world record, well, all the world records, the world record for the 60-year-old woman. And I've gone, oh, that's fun to see what it is, because that's why it excites me. It's short. Mm-hmm. And there's park runs. I love park runs. So it's what I started out as was, well, I actually started out so slightly shorter than that on the track. Mm-hmm. I started out doing 800s, 1500s, 3000s. But my first international when I was 19 was over 5K on cross country race. So I've kind of come full circle and I'm like, oh yeah, let's see how fast I can get at 5K.
Gotcha. So you gave the little tease that you were looking up to see what the world record is. Is it something that might be within reach for you, or is it pretty ridiculous?
Well, it's in reach for my ability. Okay. It's 1848, and my best time when I was 26, I think I was when I did. My best time was 15:50. Mm-hmm. So given my speed when I was younger, 1848 is within my, you know, my ability. However, I'm not sure whether it's possible, to be quite honest. You know, I'm not sure whether I will be prepared to put the training in to do it. Or, you know, at the moment, I ran a park run last Saturday, and I ran 22:17, and so it's a long way off that.
Right.
I mean, but I like seeing what's possible. I love the idea of turning 60, and you know, seeing. And I think for me, having a goal that's really, really, really high really is good for me. It's not bad for me, because I get closer than I probably would, you know, if I didn't have a. It's not even a goal. It's a seeing what's mm-hmm. there. I think if someone of 60 has been able to run that, and given I'm a good runner, who knows? And right. The who knows excites me. The trying to find out excites me. The a reason to kind of go and do some intervals and races and travel the world and find running races. And it's just fun. And I love it. And I've loved seeing how fast I can run since I was 6 years old. And I still love it. I would say I love it more now, because in my 20s, when I was trying to run very fast, there was a lot more pressure. I put more pressure on myself. Whereas now I don't. I just I just love it. And this weekend when I went and did a park run, I'm very good kind of judge of how fast I can run. And I thought, you know, I think I'm kind of worth just under 22:30, and I clearly am.
Right.
So no, it's fun. It's more the trying to find out that excites me than the actually achieving it, because who really cares, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you will. Maybe I'll come back and report in.
Yeah, it's always fun to have a world record holder on the show. Yeah, that's something you don't get to talk to a new world record holder today.
Okay, right. Well, that's added motivation.
Well, but you know, if memory serves from past conversations, I mean, and like you said, that pursuit of what's possible, but also, you know, you like to run fast, and this is giving you a little carrot, a little something to aspire to, and if you get there, great. And if not, you know, if right now when you turn 60, if you top out at 1940 or 2015 or whatever, yeah, like if you push yourself, and that's still pretty darn fast when all is said and done.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I feel. I mean, I tend with the park runs, even now, I mean, I got the best performance of the day age graded wise, because I get quite fun, this age graded thing. So I glanced through the list, and my time of 22:17 gave me the, you know, so I agree. My body's awesome, really, the way it is so willing, and it responds to training. And with this barefoot thing, it's got faster. And I ran that in my Skinner's socks. So when I run a race, I put on the Skinner's socks, because I can. They're similar for me. They're like being barefoot, because they're socks, but they mean, it means I don't have to watch where I'm putting my feet quite so much, and I can just run a bit more easily. So for me, yeah, it's fun. Just seeing what I'm doing now is fun. So seeing if I can get better, as you said, whatever I end up with is going to be good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking for myself, like, yeah, I once got down into the 19s, it was 19, I think 56 was my 5K PR.
Oh, well done. Under 20. Good.
Yeah. But I'm not there right now. That's for sure. I could give a pretty good effort and maybe be close, but I'm definitely not at that point. But yeah, it's, you know, as everybody knows that listens to the show regularly, I'm not the biggest fan of the 5K, but, it is, it, you know, I mean, as much as I say that, and I'm not wavering on, I'm going to go out and sign up for a bunch of 5Ks anytime soon, but it is nice to just blow it out of the water once in a while. And that type of distance is short enough, but it's long enough that you got to go and you got to push yourself. And, you know, I mean, you can find out how fast you are. And for somebody like you, I it doesn't surprise me that you've maybe shifted back to that type of distance at this point.
Well, also, to be honest with you, in 86, when I did all my PBs, I also did my 5K PB. And I have a theory that actually, obviously, you have to do the mileage and the long run. Mm. But for me, getting really fast at 5K and 10K meant that my marathon came out really fast. And I'm a great believer, as you are, in long, slow distance. Mm. So I did masses and masses of very easy running and a minimal amount of speed work. But I did do, obviously, I did interval training and I did race. But what happened was in getting my 5K and 10K really fast, but with this huge solid base of long, slow distance and a 20-mile run every Sunday, or a 32K, whatever people are thinking. And I then ran my fastest 5K, my fastest 10K, my fastest 10 miles, half marathon and marathon all at the same time. Well, when I say the same time, the same year.
Right.
So...
Which just, so you know, from a training perspective, just goes to show that if you build a good, strong, solid base of fitness, you don't have to just focus on building fitness for a particular distance. You know, that good running fitness, you know, like you said, you still have to train smart. You still have to do certain things. You have to make sure you're getting plenty of mileage in. But if you build that good, firm base, it can translate to a variety of distances without a whole lot of necessary specificity for that one particular type of distance that you might be racing.
Yeah, exactly. Because at the moment I'm not, I don't want to, and also I'm working a lot, and so I don't want to put the mileage in, which would mean I would be training for longer distances. And after this year, which we're going to chat about, I don't want to run very far at the moment. So for me, running a reasonable mileage and a nice amount of training that's fitting in with my life really well, then the 5K is great, and it just feels, you know, perfect, and for my body and everything. But no, I agree with you completely.
Good. Before we get into the big topic, one thing that you mentioned when you were correcting me about the injuries and kind of the early days in your career, your 30s and 40s and whatnot, transitioning through international competition to continue to run, but dealing with all these injuries. You know, you said you had just about every injury imaginable, every different body part had been injured at one point or another. Just curious, and there's nothing leading to this question other than just simply curiosity. But since you've gotten into running barefoot and taking care of your feet and things like that, have you, you know, knock on wood, been mostly injury free, or have you still kind of been bitten by the injury bug a little bit these last couple of years?
No, I've been completely injury free, except that I ran across Spain and got a stone in my foot and hurt my foot. But we'll tell you all about that. But no, apart from because I was running lopsided, but as I say, I'll explain that to you when we're exploring the topic. No, I've been completely injury free, and that's been what's amazing, because I've been on a kind of quest to unravel all the injuries from my international career since I was about, you know, in my early 30s, and particularly since I was 40. I absolutely resolved when I was around 40, and I had lots of orthotics in my shoes, and I was, you know, finding my way to run without pain, that I resolved I would find my way back to no orthotics, and I would find my way back to alignment again, because I'm a very natural runner, and I was a very free flowing runner. And it took me, you know, 18 years, but I am free. And the barefoot was it kind of came off the progress or the process, sorry, of me unraveling my injuries. The barefoot kind of came out of that. And it's definitely been, it's just been freedom for me. And no injuries except for when you do something completely extreme like I did. Right. And as I said, I got a stone trapped in my foot for 2 weeks, and I had to run 16 miles every day on it. I chose to. So that obviously unbalanced me, and then I've had a bit to unravel, but apart from that, no.
Yeah, well, and you know, I mean, that's the obviously the risk you take if you're running barefoot. But you know, in the grand scheme of things, a scratch or a stone or an abrasion or something like that is you know, that's something that you'd rather deal with that than, you know, alignments and ligaments and bone issues and all kinds of imbalances that I'm going to assume are some of the things that you dealt with early in the day earlier in your career when you were, you know, dealing with all these injuries all the time.
Yeah, I should do a sort of whistle stop tour, shouldn't I, through my body, and it's plantar fasciitis, and it's ankles, and it's calves, and it's knees, and it's hips, and it's pelvis, and, you know, everything, shoulder even. Different.
Yeah, right.
Except, as I say, that did slightly throw me out. So since barefoot across Spain, I have had my pelvis realigned again, because I knew that was slightly out again, and to be honest with you, running for a few weeks with a stone in your foot would kind of unbalance anybody, really.
Right. Yeah, of course. I could go down talking injuries all day. That's my background. It's something that I get excited about. But you know, the big thing that's on the agenda for today for this conversation and something that was in the still in the planning stages, but it was definitely getting ready to happen the last time we talked, was this barefoot across Spain. So you ran from the north coast to the south coast over I don't remember what the time frame was, 6 weeks, something like that. Finished the run on your birthday, if memory serves, or at least that was the plan, on your 59th birthday. So, you know, as I said then, and as I've said in a couple of emails we've gone back and forth, I'm excited to hear about the journey, hear about the experience. Apparently, hear about getting a phone stuck or a stone stuck in your foot. At least it's a story, if nothing else. So
challenge.
There we go, definitely a challenge. to have to navigate. So you know, for bringing us up to speed, so you decided maybe running across the country barefoot would be a good idea, and I was listening to the last episode just before this to kind of refresh what we had talked about before, and there you were struggling to come up with a reason for why you were doing it, other than, you know, I guess, you know, it'll be a fun adventure. I think is kind of what we settled on. So take us back to the beginning of the journey. So you're getting ready to run this trip across Spain barefoot. And I don't have a better way of asking the question other than let's talk about it. How did it go? Obviously you made it and it was fun, and now you're taking a little bit of less stress from running, which probably makes a lot of sense. But how was the the run across Spain?
Well, I'm speechless, obviously. Mm-hmm. It was huge. I've decided it was a pilgrimage, and I got very good at I'm much better at Spanish now, and I had to do interviews in Spanish on the television and the radio and newspapers, and so I got used to telling people it was a peregrina, and it was definitely a kind of pilgrimage, and it was very much an inner journey, and it also ended up being like a kind of retreat, but a very good fun retreat, because I had invited everybody. I'd been very vocal about this journey, and I'd invited everybody on Facebook Live, and everybody, come and join me, Spanish, English, come and join. Anyway, people did. So then it was lots of people came out. I only had 3 days in the entire journey, which was 7 weeks long, where it was only myself and the two people who were my support team, who were Jack and Maggie, who were absolutely awesome. I have to mention them, because Jack did the route for me, and he supported me every day with the car, and Maggie did all the booking of where we were and ran around getting me bandages for my feet and plasters and ointments and everything I needed, because my feet really took a pounding, as you can imagine. But I only had 3 days, just the three of us. The rest of the time there were people all the time, so we had lots of different people. Amazing wonderful experience it was, because what I did to make sure it was a really cohesive group, and that we were all, you know, really was a good experience, and that it was almost like a retreat, was that every single morning I gathered everybody. I mean, not everybody came at 6:30 in the morning, but I invited everybody to come, and we all did some Gayatri mantra chanting together. So we'd have 20 minutes of just together with this lovely, lovely sound. And then in the evenings, we all met, and we'd do a stretching routine, and then we'd do some more chanting for the chakra, you know, the sort of energy centers through the body, to just again settle us all, center us all, connect us all, and it was work. There was just such harmony and such a fabulous, fabulous energy, and people along the way were finding it transformative, and that they did things they'd never done before. They ran further than they'd run, because they joined in with me for sections, in their shoes, by the way, but they joined me for whole sections, and they and some Spanish came and joined me, and all along the way I had this incredible esprit de corps. An amazing thing happened for me, it was amazing anyway, at Easter time, because the Camino de Santiago, the kind of famous pilgrimage, goes across from the France in the Alps, I think, and it goes across Spain. And then we were staying in a place for 3 days at Easter, and we found out that we were staying in exactly the point where my journey, the north to south, crossed. So we were in the middle point of the cross. And it was just really special for me, because my whole kind of deeper experience, and the one that I realized kind of why I did it, because I didn't know before, was that it challenged me more than anything to completely and utterly stay in the step, to completely and utterly stay relaxed and be present, and completely and utterly, whatever was going on, however much, I will come on to the physical challenges, but however much I was challenged, however hard it was, to be exactly where I was and to have my mind relaxed and my spirit, or, you know, at ease, even though my body was being asked too much of, to be honest. And and that point at Easter, where I was right in the middle of the cross point, for me, it was very significant, because it felt like, you know, the journey of the cross from birth to death, or light to dark, dark to light, and then the horizontal part of the cross where it's transcending this samsara or whatever. I'm mixing all the religions up, because I'm kind of more about being present, but you know, that how we can transcend all of the yin and yang and the dark and light, and transcend it to be present and to be completely still and silent. For me, it really was important. I was only 2 weeks in, and already my feet were breaking down, and so much was happening, and the weather was appalling. And but for me, it just kept reminding me that I was on more of a pilgrimage than anything. And yes, I'm a runner, and it was running that was obviously my expression, but that I was the leader of this group, and that I therefore was challenged more than anything to practice everything that I teach in my work about being able to be, in effect, in a meditation all the time, so that we're always present. And it, and I think that of everything, that emotional and spiritual process of 7 weeks on the road, surrounded by people under me, on me very tired. I was tired from the beginning, which again I'll come to. But that I feel really, really that it, I did what I was asked to do at a deep level. That I managed to use my running, which is my personal expression, or rather I was asked to use it, and I just couldn't have not done what this run across Spain, because as you said, I didn't know why I was doing it, but I think I was doing it because it was very transformative for me, but for everybody who joined me, and people saw me, people said they learned from me, because they saw me under, you know, huge duress, because it was too hard. It was much too hard. It was much too hard. Never do anything like it again in my whole life. It was very, very difficult. So yes, I'll stop so you can ask me something.
Yes. So I know this is going to be the case throughout, where I'm going to have like 6 questions and I have to pick one. And then, you know, by the time I get to ask the next question, I'm going to have about 6 more. So, I'm going to try to fill in the gaps as much as I can, or my own curiosities. But with what you just said, it was so hard. I mean, you know, outside of the quote unquote obvious of the physical, of just, you know, as much running as you were doing, I believe that the plan, at least going into it, was about 25K per day for like 5 or 6 days in a row, and then a day off to kind of rest the feet a bit and continue along. You know, so outside of just that physical demand of doing that just about every single day, what else was so hard? I know you mentioned the weather wasn't great. You maybe weren't as prepared as you were wanted to be going into it. You know, what were some of those real struggle moments, dark moments for you during, and it sounds like at least during the early part of the trip, maybe it was the worst, but what were some of the things that were so hard during this run?
I think it was just hard the whole way, because I think that the interesting thing was, I was so prepared physically that actually, luckily, the 25K a day wasn't a problem. So ultimately I just kept thinking, oh, thank goodness I trained so much, because I was so prepared, and I am a, you know, endurance runner. I think what was hard was I never had enough sleep, because the very nature of it was, it always, you know, in bare feet it takes longer, things happen, the days were longer, whatever. We got up very, very early, and then by the time we finished, then it would be lunch, and then it would be, before I knew it, there was stretching to be done and chanting. And I was also doing a bit of work, so I'd occasionally talk to a client. I never did more than probably one person a day, but I'd fit that in. And then before we knew it, it was dinner. But in Spain, you know, dinner's like at midnight, it seems, but very late anyway. And by the time we got to go to bed, every night, I did it on, you know, kind of, anything from occasionally a good night was like I'd get 7 hours sleep, but I was sleeping 5 or 6 hours a night, and it certainly wasn't enough. But I was kind of pleased that, again, I could do it, and I felt good in my spirit. I never was in a, you know, difficult mood or anything. I just managed it all. But then the thing that was difficult, so number one, I realized, you know, within a few days, right, I'm not going to get enough sleep. Okay, it's only 7 weeks. This is like a huge challenge. But it's only 7 weeks, and I have to just step up and, you know, do this. And I did. And the next thing that happened was that the weather in Spain decided, I mean, the Spanish are delighted, and I made jokes in my interviews in Spain that, you know, it had taken a mad Englishwoman to come and run in her bare feet across their country to bring the rain, because they had got their water table was so low that they were in trouble rain-wise in Spain. But I came. And they had the worst spring they've ever had, and I mean, good for them, because they wanted the weather and they wanted the rain. But for me, oh dear Lord, it was just unbelievably difficult, because with bare feet, if the roads are wet, obviously it's like sandpaper, because your feet get like in a bath, you know, when they get a bit soft,
right?
And of course they break down. So on the first day we set off from Swansea, I was set off by the Lord Mayor, and it was all brilliant. And when I say it was so hard, it was so hard, but I had an amazing time. I must put that in. It sounds like I'm going, oh God, because actually I had the most wonderful, incredible, special, memorable time. But it was also never ceasingly hard. Probably the last few days when it got sunny were better in terms of the hardness. But anyway, So the mayor of Swansea sent me off. We had a police escort out of the town, and it was all fabulous. And then that was day one. It rained most of the way. And then day two, we set off, and we were standing in a town hall somewhere in Spain with this pouring rain, absolutely pouring rain. And I was standing there going, right, ready, steady, go. And then some people came rushing up to me because I became very famous. They wanted their photos taken with me. This kept happening the whole way along. And then people would jump out of their cars, and they were hooting their horns at me, or they'd run out of the car. One day, it was funny, they ran out of their car, and I was with a group of about six of us, and we all got together, and they went, no, we only want Julia. We're in Spanish, you know, we only want Julia. So, but anyway, day three, this was the third day of rain. We're going through the mountains in the north of Spain. We ran for 3.5 hours uphill. When I say we, I was then with Josie, who is wonderful. She's an osteopath, and she'd come out just to see me off. And then she was going to go back to the UK and get on with her life. But she loved it so much that she packed up her house and came out and did the last 5 weeks with me, which was absolutely fabulous because she helped me with my bad foot. So I had this osteopath on site. So that was incredible. But she was there on the third day. We ran up this mountain for 3.5 hours. We reached the snow. It's just mad. And that day, my feet, I was looking at them going, oh my God, look at my feet, Josie, because they were starting to break down on the underside. And I was on day three.
Right.
And so the next day, I went, right, I've got to be wise. It was snow everywhere. So I bandaged up where they were breaking. And I walked. So the fourth day, I just walked the whole distance with her. And Jane joined us. And we were just, you know. So I was always incredibly wise. Then they recovered. And this was a pattern the whole way through. They recovered. That they were amazingly amazing at healing. And I'd smother them in ointment and all this stuff. And then I'd have a day, as you said, to have recovery. But I can remember then they'd get better. And then I remember one day on the road and they were bleeding. I stopped and I was like, oh man, my feet are bleeding. And I was with Maggie and Jack. And I said, look, you do know, don't you, I am going to do this. And this was only 2 weeks in. And Jack and Maggie said to me, Jack and me have had a conversation about that. This, we said, we can see Julian never doubts she's going to do it. We're not going to doubt you. And it was a very good solidarity between the three of us that, you know, because it didn't, at times you'd look at my feet and you'd think, how on earth is she going to run on those? Mm-hmm. And so what I would do, I bandaged them, of course, I put stuff on to help them. And so I think really it was a constant, you know, yeah, it was constantly, I was being asked, challenged. And because the weather was so bad, we'd have, I can't really remember many sunny days. We were in one place where they said it had been 30 degrees the day year before and it was naught. And, you know, we went over three mountain ranges. So, of course, you hit snow.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, I left England because I don't like bad weather. That's a throwaway comment. I love you, England. but, you know, it was. And then, of course, I got this little stone in my foot that I just couldn't get out. And so some days I could feel it, some days I couldn't. And it was, you know, just not particularly comfortable, but I couldn't get it out. So for 2 weeks I had this slight discomfort, and then my foot, we got it out, but then my foot went completely mad and went, I got this desperate nerve pain shooting through it, which stopped me. You know, when that nerve pain just goes working through your body. And that day we were in a cafe and we had called Josie back and there was a gang of us. And we spent 2 hours with me lying on the floor in the cafe while she treated me. And the Spanish were wonderful. Everybody's sitting about having coffee and eating cake and or whatever you eat in Spain, you know, not actually cake, but all that. And everybody, and then the Spanish would come in and there's this group of English people and an English woman lying on the floor with another one holding her foot. And they would just go, buenos dias, step out, go on, get their cafe con leche. And it was very funny. But that day, then Jack said, he just thought, oh, she's not going to make this. And I got up and I wasn't sure I could put my foot to the floor. And then I could, and we walked. So we walked the rest of that day. We had 15K still to go. And then the next day I walked the whole way. But then that day the press turned up. And I was like, oh no, I've got to do a little bit of running because they were right at the end in the last K. And I was running next to my friend Tim. I wasn't. I was walking. Right. I said to him, and I said, "Oh God, I've got to do this. I've got to do this." And Tim said, "Come on, you can do it. You can do it for the cameras. Mm-hmm. Give them what they want. Give them what they want to." So I did, and I ran a kilometer. Amazing. I managed to do it, and then of course they wanted me to do it again and again for different shots, and then I had to do an interview. But I did it. The body's amazing, actually. Although I don't know if it's the body, I don't know what it was. I just, because that to get that foot better took a good 10 days. I'm sure it was 10 days. It was a long time, and I was in so much pain some of the time. And I was kept saying on Facebook Live, look, anybody else, if you've got an injured foot,
don't do what I'm doing.
I recommend you'd even, right. You know, not run. But don't do what I'm doing. I said, the only reason I'm walking 16 miles a day on this is because, one, I've got, you know, I've made a choice to do it, but I wouldn't recommend it. But anyway, it got better. I had Josie's treatments every day, and it got better. And then I, you know, was ultimately able to, the sun came out in the last, probably the last week, and I was able to run into Almuñécar in great triumph, barefooted and healed and healthy.
Yeah, it's, wow. I mean, it's, so many times where it would have been probably easy to, or maybe not easy for you, but easy for most of us to just say, you know what, like this isn't worth it. You know, am I doing more damage than you know what I should be doing? You know, making a situation way worse than it could be. Yet you kept going. Was there ever? It doesn't sound like it, but was there ever an inkling, a seed of doubt of maybe you should stop, or was that never even on your radar?
I think the thing is that if I'd been doing damage to myself, I would have stopped. Absolutely. No question. I'm completely comfortable to, if it had been some damage to my body, I wasn't going to damage myself in the long term. And I'm a very, obviously I know my body very well, and I would have stopped. So, and because I didn't have an attachment, it was kind of interesting because I didn't have an ego attachment to it in any way. Within a few days of doing it, when I realized how hard it was, I was like, well, I don't need to be doing this for me at all. I could stop now. I'm very good at stopping things if they're wrong for me. Mm-hmm. But what I realized was it wasn't wrong for me. I knew it was a very important journey, but I also did know that it wasn't just about me, and that I had this whole gang of people. One, a lot of gang of people who had invited to my birthday party, which I wanted to arrive at. Obviously, I could have caught a plane, I realised, but I didn't want to arrive at. But secondly, I had people who had booked their kind of holidays. You know, they'd booked a week here, 5 days there, another week there, and they had all planned this round coming to me. So that was another thing, was that I had people that were really excited by it and were coming with me. I also had this whole following of people who I was talking to every day on Facebook Live, and I had a whole lot of people really excited by and inspired, and you know, so it was like it wasn't just about me really at all. In fact, it wasn't really about me. It was about me at a deep level. It was very much about something very transformative for me, but it was about everybody, and my whole sort of message, if there was a message at all. But what I kept saying was that, you know, we're all in this together, and we're all taking the step. We're all on a journey, and it's like the journey from birth to death. But we stay in our own step, and we look after our own kind of, you know, emotions, and don't project them onto other people. And we can end up being really strongly in relationship together in the most powerful way. So therefore, it was a metaphor for that. And also, I was raising money. I raised about £20,000. I raised, yeah, for £16,000 for the UK, the hospices in the UK, and £4,000 for the hospice in Malaga, because there's 12 hospices, Friends of Sussex Hospices in the UK, and Kudeka in Malaga. And I actually, that was made that much because Angela, who's incredible, she doubled. So I raised whatever that is, 8 and 2, and she doubled it. So there was that going on too. So it was about so many more people than me, and I knew that I was good. I was the leader. So yes, if I'd been damaging myself, that would have been a really bad message. And I wasn't damaging myself. It was you know, asking a lot of me, but I didn't hurt myself.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I do live long answers, don't I?
No, that's quite all right. It's really interesting to just hear the perspective and hear, you know, how much of a struggle it was, at least as how much it sounds like it was. Certainly some days probably worse than others, but you just kept going. You just kept going. And I think that there's, you had big reasons to keep doing it, and that kind of keeps pushing you, which is something that maybe we can all kind of learn from a bit.
Well, I was very, very relaxed too. I think relaxing the mind is the most important thing. And I remember one day when I was on my own, it was one of the 3 days alone. It was freezing cold. I woke up in the morning with the rain howling outside. Well, wind howls, doesn't it? Rain flat lashes. I woke up to this and I was like, oh, okay. And I was dropped off at the starting point, and it was horrendous conditions. And it was pouring with rain, freezing cold. And I was on my own. And I just kept relaxed in my mind, and I'd sing when you walk through a storm, hold your, you know, and I was singing to myself and just keeping going. And then I got to a town, and Maggie met me there, and we realized I was really, really over cold. So we went into a cafe, and I mean, it's just too cold. So I went into a cafe and warmed up with coffee and changed my clothes. But then I set off again, and that day I again kept myself very still. But then when I rang Anadi, my husband, because he couldn't be with me, he had loads and loads of work. So he was only there a few days at the beginning, came in the middle for a couple of days, and he came obviously to the end. But that particular day, I could never get hold of him because there was never networks, there was never signals. I was out in the back of beyond. Mm-hmm. And that particular day, about 4K from the end, and it was just easing. And the day was, and I knew I was nearly there. And that, you know, it was, yeah, it was stopping raining, and I got hold of him. And of course, because he's my husband, he answered the phone, and then he said, "Oh, hello, beautiful." And I said, "This is too hard." Then I cried because it was him, and I went, "This is too hard." And he's brilliant. He just waited until, and he was just there, and then I was fine. Right. And it was, you know, I was like, then I'd say, actually, you know, I was, but he was occasionally, he was the only person who would hear me, you know, when I went, I'm not sure, oh, this is too hard. I never said I couldn't do it, but every so often he would hear the, this is too hard. Mm-hmm. And then it would clear it from me. And then I didn't have to have, you know, everybody else, I didn't want to have them. It was, you know, as I say, it was more about more than that. And I knew it was only, you know, me being, yeah, it was just too, I just needed a little bit of, well, I would have been all right if he hadn't been there, but it was lovely he was.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you just need to get that out, and then you can regroup and keep going forward. Speaking of going forward, before we move too much farther along, Julia, I do want to take a quick second and thank today's sponsor. Energy Bits has been on board for a while, a product that I'm a fan of, if for no other reason than I recognize that I need to get more greens and veg in my diet. And I keep trying, but man, it's just not something that comes natural to me. But with Energy Bits, which are pills, tablets, basically, of dried and compressed algae. So you're getting all kinds of vitamins, minerals, things like that. Really super healthy. And you know, you just take a handful of them in the morning, which is at least what I do. So at least I know I'm getting some greens in that day. And then hopefully I can force myself to grab a few more vegetables throughout the day. But guys, if you're like me and would like a little bit more, you know, healthy vegetables, vitamins, minerals, all of the things in your diet, definitely would recommend checking out Energy Bits. It's something that I definitely am noticing the difference of, you know, like a lot of things, as long as you're consistent with it, you start to notice that you're feeling a bit better, recovering a bit better, things like that. And probably it's because I'm getting a few more greens than I normally would, and I'd probably be better. You know, I don't need y'all to tell me. I know I would be better if I got more greens besides just the Energy Bits, but at least it's a start, right? So if you'd like to join me on that train of, you know, swallowing some greens on a daily basis, head over to energybits.com and make sure you use the code at checkout, DizRuns. It'll save you 20%, which is a decent little savings as well. So check them out, energybits.com. And if you have any questions on the product itself, let me know. I'm always happy to talk about the sponsors, because I wouldn't be working with them if there wasn't something that I used myself and believed in as well. So I'll answer whatever questions you might have. Energybits.com. Use code DIZRUNS. So, Julia, obviously...
I've just written that down. I love... I'm a marketing man's dream for anything healthy. So I've just written down energybits.com.
Fair enough. Yeah, definitely. check them out. I don't know what the international shipping might look like for that, but check it out. And who knows? It's a global world we live in these days, so I wouldn't be surprised if it worked out. But, yeah. You know, so obviously this was a challenge. There were some days that were much more challenging than others, perhaps. But I'd be curious to know from your perspective, from your experience, which was more of a challenge for you, the mental side or the physical side? Because it's certainly it sounds like both sides offered their challenges and offered the struggles and the difficulties. But which was harder for you to handle?
I don't think the mental side was hard because I didn't really have a mental challenge because I've worked forever on relaxing my mind. Mm-hmm. And that's been, as I think we spoke a bit about in our last conversation, that for me, being able to be still and not let my mind get in the way, I know I've got a strong mind. I just, you know, it depends. It's different people, isn't it? I know that I am incredibly strong and that I can keep going under adversity. And I know that emotionally, I know it physically, and I just know that about myself. So I didn't have to use my mind as such. I just have in place a set of strategies. Mm. I know how to keep going. I know how to take the next step and the next one and the next one. I know how to, for me, keeping at ease is the most important thing in that. And it's being not, in lots of ways, not thinking, because if I were to think, I wouldn't have wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. So my kind of strategy in the mornings when I'd wake up and it was, you know, I was tired or it was not good conditions, I would literally just not think, get myself, just do the routine, get up. I had to strap my hammer toes every day because they bash on the mm-hmm. floor and get hurt. And I would just go ahead with the routine. So in a way, that wasn't a challenge. The physical, I'm again good under adversity. So I think that... in many ways, the thing that I'm the proudest of was the fact that I spent 7 weeks surrounded by people and wonderful people. Don't get me wrong. I loved everybody who came out. We had an incredibly rich experience of sharing. But I'm an introvert. You wouldn't think that, would you, talking to me? But but my preference is for being, you know, a lot of solitary time, being alone or being with one person. And I worked on a long time ago with my Roz, who's a fabulous supervisor for me in my work with people. And she's also my therapist in the past. And I worked a lot on being able to be in groups because I'm educated as an extrovert, you know, my schooling, my mm-hmm. Family. I know how to go out, and I'd always look the life and soul in a party because, you know, of my education, but I would always get exhausted and the next day not feel good. And I never enjoyed groups. I enjoyed it. I looked like I was enjoying it, but it was something, it wasn't easy for me. And so I really worked on that, to be able to be at ease and enjoy being in a group of people, and to be able to, because I'm highly sensitive, so I notice things mm-hmm. all the time. So, you know, and I, yeah, just, it wasn't my preferred way. So, but I didn't want to not be able to be in a group. If I have solitary time, and after the event, I was in the mountains on my own for quite some time, then it's a choice. It's not because I'm running away. And right. I wanted, for my own evolution, I wanted to be able to not be a lone solitary person at times because I can't be with people. And at that, for me, the fact that it was such a positive experience for everybody, that I loved it. I enjoyed it. I loved being with the people. It was rich experience for me. So for me, that would have been something that before, the thought of 7 weeks in a group of people mm-hmm. and changing people, I don't think I'd have been able to do. And at the same time, putting myself under extreme physical challenge. So I would say it's the whole thing that mm-hmm. I was, all of it was, it asked that I was always, you know, being my best self, if that makes sense. Right. I was always, I say my best self, my most at ease self. So I was always thinking in terms of that responsibility of the impact we have on everybody else. I don't know if I'm making it clear, but it was just that the whole thing, it was multifaceted. Mm-hmm. And I asked about of myself that was beyond anything I'd ever asked because of the nature of the distance, the fact it was barefoot, the fact I had to speak Spanish mm-hmm. and I'd only just learnt it, and I had to, well, I only just learnt it. I'm miles better at Spanish now than I was then, that I was in the public eye and that I had people around me. I think it was the whole challenge that asked of me. So there wasn't exactly, it was the ingredients of it all. Does mm-hmm. that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And I think the way you said it being multifaceted really, really rings true for me, because it's easy from the outside. It's easy from my perspective to look at it and think that it's all the physical. It's just the doing it, getting up every day, going, getting your time on your feet, getting covering your distance, taking care of your feet. You know, the like you said, the rain and how that kind of helped to tear your feet up a bit more than it would have if it would have stayed dry. You know, so I just think of all the physical, but yeah, I mean, you know, I can totally relate to, you know, being in the moment and being, you being the one going through it and having that. I'm an introvert too. So I can imagine, you know, it's great to run with a group once in a while, but I would imagine that if I was doing that daily, and like you said, it's different people every day and different conversations and probably like having the same conversation with different people a bunch of times. Like, yeah, there's a lot of factors at play that are easy to gloss over at first glance. But, you know, when you're living it and you're there for those 7 weeks, it's a lot of factors at play.
Well, you're also being a personal trainer, because I, you know, before in my late 20s and early 30s, my work was in being a personal trainer, because the people who ran with me, often they were doing something they'd never done before. They were going a further distance. They hadn't run for a long time or whatever it was. And there was a group of Spanish people ran with me. And then two of them did about 10K of my run with me, and the woman had never run. She'd walked a lot.
Wow.
So I'm going at a completely different pace to the pace I would run at. I'm talking in Spanish. Mm-hmm. I'm coaching her and I'm trying to make sure that I'm watching where I put my feet and that I'm not going to tread on anything. And I'm, you know, and she didn't speak a word of English, she and her husband. Mm-hmm. So it was asked masses of me to be encouraging to them, to be, they were excited, the mad English woman they were running with her, you know, the famosa. And so, and those things people wouldn't realize, because of course I'm good at it. Of course I enjoyed it, but it also asked a lot of me, and that was happening a lot, you know, and it was exciting because people were doing things they didn't think they could. And yeah, I mean, it was great. But it was just asked a lot. There were times, of course, when I was running with people who were exactly my pace, and Josie ran with me a lot. She was doing her own training, but she ran at the beginning when she ran with me on the distances. Then I had three people come out, Katie, Tony and Rob, and Katie and Tony ran loads with me. And there we all are the same kind of ability runners. So then I had 3 days where it was just chatting and running, you know, it was a different thing. It was just always, except I remember actually that day, Ellie, lovely darling Ellie, I had two godchildren run with me, and she did 15 miles and she'd never run that far before. But we were going in the car to meet these new people who were turning up, and they were brilliant people. But she said, oh, it feels a bit like we're going to a race. She said, well, how do you feel? And I said, well, actually, I do feel a bit nervous because they're actually good runners and I'm tired. Now, I know I'm a good runner, but I'm tired. So she was right. She'd picked up that I was a little bit like, oh, this is brilliant that they're coming, but actually, oh, am I up to this? You know, so it was lots of things, lots. Yeah.
Gotcha. What was finishing it like? I mean, it was your birthday. Like you said, you had friends and people coming in to be there at the end. I have to imagine it was a party to end all parties. What was that finishing moment day or two after? What was that like for you?
It was absolutely everything I'd seen and known. Do you know, as I was going across the country, every so often the vision of me coming into Almuñécar would flash unbidden into my sight. And I'd go, I know I'm going to make it because I haven't tried to create this. It's just come into my vision. And it was exactly as I kind of had foreseen, because it was wonderful. A couple of days before, lots of people started to come out, and I had a load of people. That picture I've sent you with us on the road, that was a few, you know, quite a lot of the people who'd come out to run on those last couple of days. And then I said, it was like kind of wedding, you know, because I had everybody arriving in the hotel where I finished, Casablanca. So Anadi arrived out, my husband, but he went over as a sort of meeter and greeter. And the night before, they apparently all went out for a fabulous meal on the beach. There was, I don't know, 40 or 50 people, and or about 40, actually, I think. Yeah, it was about 40 people who were the friends. And then my great friend Rob, I had a most fabulous time because he had somehow booked into the hotel I was in. And he, I've run miles and miles and miles on the Sussex Downs with. So we ended up, just the two of us, having dinner together the night before. It was a chance to catch up. So, and then in the morning, I went over up to where we were finishing, and loads of people came and ran that last stretch with me. And we stopped for a kind of breakfast on the way because it was my birthday, and it was like, it was the last day and I'd done it really. Mm-hmm. And it was a beautiful sunny day, not a cloud in the sky, and it was mainly downhill. I mean, it was all just fabulous. And then we got to the end, and we were about 2 miles from the end. And then my friend Rach, who was an international runner too, and she ran in the past, but she hasn't been doing much running, and her body started to hurt. So she said, oh, no, go on, I'm hurting. I said, Rach, I'm not going to go and finish without you. So she went on and walked. So the rest of us sat on the wall on the seafront about a mile and a half, 2 miles from the end. So it was really nice because I was able to just sit there with everybody. Mm-hmm. And run up Jane, who was my friend who'd done this incredible balloons and wonderful, you know, music to greet me. And I just said, look, let me know when they arrive, because, or they're, you know, everybody. Oh, and there was someone else I was waiting for. So it was like I had this pause to just be there on this road. And, you know, with this, all these people had gathered, and there was, you know, press there, and there was a whole crowd of Spanish and English and all my friends. Mm-hmm. And then I ran along with them all, and then I suddenly heard all these klaxons and all this sound, and I just raced to the finish, and it was just incredible, just joyous, and everybody was very excited, and there was music, and then I, you know, everybody started dancing, and then I said, it was time came for me to give a speech, and I said, my sister said it was very funny. My sister was there, my brother was there. She said it was very funny. You said, oh, I'm going to do the speech in English, she said, and then proceeded to do it in Spanish. because I suddenly realised, I looked about me and thought, actually, I'm in Spain. I'm going to do a speech at my dinner, because I had a dinner, you know, big dinner, mm-hmm. birthday dinner in the evening. I'll do an English speech then. I looked about me and all these Spanish people, and I thought, oh, no, I can't do the speech in English. mm-hmm. So it was just, no, it was magical. And just a perfect, everything was exactly as you would imagine a wonderful finale. And then I had a fabulous dinner in the evening, and it was, yeah, really, really lovely.
Good. Well, there's no way we can do justice to that journey, I imagine, in the last 30 minutes or so, 35 minutes that we've been talking about it. But it sounds incredible. It sounds obviously like there was some challenges. It was hard, but it was a great experience. And so as we're wrapping up, Julia, the philosophical question for today, I would just be curious, and I've said this before, that I feel like running is a really great teacher. Like I've learned lots of lessons about myself and about other, you know, lessons from running that can then translate to other areas of my life, family, work, whatever it might be, things that I've learned from running that I can implement other places. I have to imagine that over the course of 7 weeks running across the country of Spain, there were a few things that you probably, at least potentially could have learned. I imagine that you probably did. So just be curious, what is one kind of lasting lesson that you'll take away from this experience and continue to, you know, probably use and learn from and you know, grow from or grow because of going forward?
Do you know, that is interesting, because I have really, what I've really seen is that I work with people, I'm a healer, a teacher, a mentor, whatever we want to call it. I've really seen myself. I've really seen my, something Anadi always said to me is, he calls me beautiful, actually. Beautiful, you don't fully see yourself. I think that what's happened is witnessing myself over the 7 weeks, I'm owning my healing, my ability, allow myself to spread it further, because I think there's a part, this is the introvert part of me that's slightly held back. I think I've done more, I've done a bit more speaking and more. I've always done speaking all my life, gone out, but always reluctantly. I think something's changed, and I'm willing. I recognize that it's something people love and want, and I see myself more clearly, and I am willing to allow it, the energy to go out further. I think that's it.
I love it. So once again, guys, if you want to connect with Julia a bit more and follow along with whatever that next adventure might be, chasing down a world record, maybe, who knows what the future has in store. But JuliaKaiTaylor.com is the website, on the Twitters at JuliaKaiTaylor, the number one, and on Instagram at Julia_Kai. And once again, if you missed the previous episodes of the show, we were on episode 425 was round one. Episode 531 is round two. And this episode, DizRuns.com/635. You want to see some photos from the journey across Spain and all the links and everything that we talked about today will be included there as well. Once again, DizRuns.com/635. So, Julia, thank you once again for coming back. It's always good to reconnect and chat a bit with a friend that still is a virtual friend, but one of these days we're going to get some actual miles in person. But certainly appreciate your time and whatever the future holds for you, 5K and otherwise. Certainly wish you nothing but the best and looking forward to staying in touch. And who knows, maybe doing a round four at some point down the road as well.
Thank you. Well, I really, really love it. Love talking to you. Really enjoy it. Thank you, Denny.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. Hope that you enjoyed today's conversation between Julia and myself, the old third round of our continuing conversation, it seems. And as per usual, I'd be curious to know what stood out to you from this episode. Julia is one that's usually full of nuggets, and I don't feel like today let us down either. One thing that really stood out to me from what we talked about today was the idea of not thinking. Towards the end there, when we were talking a lot about her trip across Spain, she mentioned that there were some days she just didn't really want to go. But if she started to think about it, she was really in trouble. But as long as she was just almost on autopilot, just made, getting up that morning and doing what she needed to do, part of the routine and not having to think about it, she was able to keep going, get out there, take the next leg of her journey and continue running across the country of Spain. And I just kept thinking to myself how much more I need to be able to do that type of thing. Stop thinking, on race day, stop thinking about how far you have to go and just worry about running the next mile or running up the hill or, holding your pace and just focusing on that and letting the miles take care of themselves. If it's weather related, as winter is starting to approach some of you, winter isn't too big of a problem for me, not trying to brag, but just, I'm not trying to complain about the winter, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But for those of you that are in, serious winter climates, you might not want to do it. You might not want to have to be stuck on the treadmill. But instead of thinking about it and worrying about it and using up mental anguish, you just have the routine. You get up and you go. You get up and put your clothes on and get outside. You get up and get on the treadmill and do what you got to do. And don't let yourself think about it, because if you do, you might talk yourself out of it. And I feel like that's what Julia was saying ultimately is, the days she didn't want to keep going, the days that her feet hurt, if she would have thought about it, she might not have gone out there that day. But by keeping things on autopilot, making it routine, she was able to just go. Just go. And, outside of running, that can apply to other things, related to your running, though. Your foam rolling, your stretching, your strength training, your getting enough sleep, just whatever. Setting those things as routine. Setting reminders on your phone so that you don't have to think about it. It just goes off at 9 o'clock at night to say, get in bed. Or turn off the TV so you're unexposed to the blue light and start winding down so that when you do go to bed, you fall asleep quicker. Whatever it is, just setting things up so you don't have to think about it. Make them part of the routine is a nice little success hack, if you will. Not a big fan of hacks all the time, but I think this is one of those things where you can really use it to your advantage if you're intentional about it and setting yourself up and not having to think about every little decision that you have to make each day. But that was my takeaway. What about you? What stood out to you from this episode? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. And of course, you can head over to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at DizRuns.com/635, and leave your comments and takeaways and thoughts and feedbacks and all of those things there as well. One other thing that I forgot to mention in the conversation with Julia, if you want to see more of her run across Spain videos and blog posts and the whole nine yards, that website is barefootacrossspain.com. She forgot to remind me to mention it. I didn't think to mention it. And then after we were done talking, she was like, oh, I could have given you that website. So check it out if you want to see more of the photos and, like I said, the videos and all of the things about her run across Spain. If the conversation piqued your interest, barefootacrossspain.com is the website. And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap this thing up. Once again, energybits.com. Use the code DizRun. Save yourself 20% at checkout. And also throw a couple shekels my way by doing so as well. At no additional cost to you. Literally, you're saving money and giving me money all at the same time. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Plus, you're getting your more greens, which is maybe the most important part of that whole transaction, is you're getting some things that are going to help you be healthier and hopefully a better runner as well. So energybits.com, thanks for the sponsorship. Thank you guys for supporting the sponsors. And now, without any further ado, we'll put a bow on this thing. Thank you guys for listening. Certainly appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed this one. And until next time, please be well. Take good care. Thanks again for listening. And we'll talk soon. Take care, guys.